Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
It is Victory Sunday. Welcome in, everybody, to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We've got a ton to go over today. The Packers defeat the Ravens 30-7, a complete 180 from a week ago with what happened not only in the joint practice, but in the preseason game with Denver. We'll talk about that, all the key takeaways, the biggest plays, the players that really helped themselves in this game, some players who hurt themselves, and I did have the opportunity already. The game film came out early, so I had the opportunity to go and do all of my grades for both offense and defense, so we will get to those at the end as well. Before we get into everything, we do have to go over, of course, our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. A lot of options in this one, right? But I went with Christian Welch. I thought he did a fantastic job of just being all over the place, not only on defense, but on special teams as well. Ended the day with 6 tackles, 2 pass breakups, 1 interception, almost had 2 interceptions. Could argue maybe should have had 2 interceptions, but either way, still a massively impactful game. Had a really nice return on that interception as well. Played a huge chunk of the game, was even making tackles really late in the fourth quarter in this one. So I just thought this was a massively impressive performance from Christian Welch. And for a guy who is right on that roster bubble, who is right there with an opportunity, I think, to make this team and is certainly in conversation to do exactly that, he made it incredibly difficult, not only just in this game, but all throughout camp, all throughout preseason. These last 2 games from Welch have been really, really good. And he's been a player that I don't think anyone really, you know, going into training camp expected a ton from. You're just sort of expecting, yeah, he's kind of a core special teams guy, but they went out and they drafted a couple linebackers. They brought back Eric Wilson. Isaiah McDuffie's here. Quay Walker's here. Maybe there's a spot for him as a special teamer, but that might be it. But he's really played well on defense, like what he's done in run defense. And then, of course, has the big interception, another pass breakup. Just a fantastic game. And when you're going into a game like this, and your potential spot on the team is on the line and you go and perform at that level, it always is a little bit more special. So my Luigi's Pizza player of the game is Christian Welch. As a reminder, Hy-Vee this week in Green Bay is selling Luigi's Thin Crust Pizzas for $5.99 a piece over the next month. So you're going to want to make sure you check that out. I also want to clarify, I know if some people have asked me both in person and on Twitter, hey, like, this is the Luigi's, this is not a Luigi's Pizza place. There's no place that you can go to and get a Luigi's Pizza. Like, there's, I know there's like Luigi's Pizza Palace and some other ones. Those things are totally different. So the Luigi's frozen pizzas you can only find at your grocer. They don't, there's not a restaurant that's attached to this. So it's just the frozen pizzas. You can find them in Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Michigan, and Illinois. Make sure to get one as soon as you can because they are delicious and you will not go wrong anytime you are having a victory pizza with Luigi's. All right, let's go over everything that happened in this game, all the key takeaways, and then we'll get into some positives and negatives, and then we'll go through the grades as well. Let's start with the inactives, because it was a lengthy list of inactives, 38 in all. I will read through them in just a moment at warp speed, but I think there's a couple noteworthy things here. One, Robert Rochelle was out with a hip injury. Now, this can get very complicated. I talked about this a little bit on the live post-game show, but when you have a player that has an injury, if you do want to waive them, you have to waive them injured. And then if they go unclaimed, they revert to IR, and then you release them off of IR with a injury settlement, which you have to pay for, which comes out of the salary cap. But also, you cannot re-sign them for the length of the time that they would be injured for. Meaning like if you settle that like a 4-week injury, you can't sign them for the 4 weeks. Plus, I think it's like 6 weeks after that as well. There's a length of time after that, which makes it near impossible that you ever get a player like that back. And we saw that happen last year with Lou Nichols, where they had to release him, you know, with the injury designation. He ends up on the Eagles practice squad before he would have been eligible to even return to Green Bay. So those things get a little bit more complicated. Obviously, if they want Robert Rochelle on the roster, and, you know, hopefully he's just good to go by week 1 and they can make make that decision in and of itself. But if it's not, you know, had he not been hurt, if they don't have to release him with an injury settlement, and maybe they still don't, but if they don't have to, then he's a player that you really want back on your practice squad, right? But if you release him with that injury settlement, it gets a lot more complicated at that point. So a noteworthy hip injury for Robert Rochell. Hopefully he can get back sooner rather than later, and hopefully it doesn't affect his status with the Packers or any team for that matter with what's going on with what is considered a hip injury per the Packers. The other two that were somewhat interesting here, Edgerrin Cooper did not play. That's not unexpected. He has not done any teamwork. Same thing with Jordan Morgan. He did not do teamwork this week. You know that they would have loved to have gotten those guys some playing time and, you know, just kind of work a little bit of the rust off and get them more ingrained in the system, but neither were able to go. Both of them did not play. You knew they'd be cautious if need be, and that's the direction that they went with, but both Morgan and Cooper did not play in this game. All right, the full list of inactives outside of Robert Rochell, who we went over, Quay Walker, Josh Jacobs, Christian Watson, Jordan Love, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Javon Bullard, Eric Stokes, Jair Alexander, Keyshawn Nixon, A.J. Dillon, Xavier McKinney, Marshawn Lloyd, Evan Williams, Carrington Valentine, Eric Wilson, Zach Tom, Rashawn Gary, Kingsley and Igbari, Edgerrin Cooper, Isaiah McDuffie, Rashid Walker, Spencer Wege, Josh Myers, Andre Dillard, Elton Jenkins, Sean Ryan, Jordan Morgan, Tyler Davis, Tucker Kraft, Romeo Doubs, Luke Musgrave, LVN, Preston Smith, T.J. Slayton, Devontae Wyatt, and Kenny Clark. Green Bay basically told us who the majority of their roster locks are coming into cutdown day. Obviously, some of those guys are out injured, like a Spencer Wege and A.J. Dillon, etc. But the huge chunk of those players are healthy scratches because they want them healthy for the season, which again is basically telling you which players are locks. And it's not to say that guys like Tyron Hopper and a few other guys, obviously Daniel Whalen and there's a few more that you know, played in this game aren't roster locks as well, but you got a good feel for where Green Bay stands on a lot of these players. So those are your inactives. As I sort of mentioned at the onset, this was such a juxtaposition from the Broncos week. And I want to go back a week because I think it's important to do so. One of the things that I mentioned last week that I was almost excited for was that Green Bay got punched in the face a little bit. That's a great time to get punched in the face. It's going to happen to almost every team at some point in the season. And if you can experience that in the preseason and in a joint practice and the preseason game after and understand like, hey, all right, we have work to do, that can be a very powerful thing. And like I said, there are very few times. And in fact, I would argue there's no better time, period, than like the second preseason game. That is a great time to have that happen. And I think we saw that Green Bay did have lessons learned from that game. Now, it's still, again, a lot of backups last week. And we, you know, obviously during the joint practice, the starters played, but I don't want to read too much into it. But I do think that we saw a much greater intensity, a much greater physicality. We just saw better emotion, more effort. I just thought everything was better that you want to see out of a game that had a little bit of a rough week a week ago. They bounced back in a very big way. And the results in either game do not matter. One iota, right? It couldn't matter less. You know, we're looking at player evaluations in these games. But you do like the fact that they responded in a big way. And like I said, it was almost the exact opposite. Denver, you got the better of Green Bay in joint practices and then punched them in the mouth in the game and completely ran away with it. Green Bay got the better of Baltimore in their joint practice and then completely, you know, punched Baltimore in the mouth in the preseason game, albeit again with both sides having a lot of backups. But it was just a much better brand of football, and I liked how Green Bay responded overall. And I think that was a really great, I think, even though, again, the majority of players that are going to be playing in week one against the Eagles are not even in this game, I still thought it was an important response, and you could tell that there was a better energy, not only in the game, but in the practice on Thursday against the Ravens as well. So loved the difference, and I think they did learn a little bit of a lesson against the Broncos. And as I mentioned, just like last week, the score doesn't matter here, but the evaluations do. And there were a lot of core players that, I shouldn't say core players, but a lot of bubble players that had either some really impressive performances or some that are still question marks. And let's just get the elephant in the room out of the way right away. The two sort of big nagging takeaways, and there's a lot of positives we're going to get to, so bear with me, but the two big nagging takeaways from this game are still backup QB and kicker. And it's been this way for a bit now, right? Where those are sort of the two that just kind of are like, you know, gnawing at your side and being like, hey, you know, this might be a problem. And let's just start with the quarterback position. Michael Pratt did some good things. The touchdown to Bo Melton was awesome. Beautiful throw. You know, he led a couple scoring drives, 8 of 12, 80 yards, one touchdown. And actually it was going pretty darn well until it wasn't. And there was a really awful interception that I don't know entirely. So I think it was Swinson was the tight end on the play. I could be misremembering that, but I think it was Swinson did a little out and up. He's looking left. He comes back right. I think he sees Swinson on the up, but somehow completely misses the defender that's very clearly right in front of him. And he throws it in a way that I don't think Swinson ever would have had a chance. And instead, right to the defender. It was a very odd play. What I will say about Michael Pratt is turnovers have not been his MO in training camp at all. He has taken fantastic care of the football, and this felt more like a one-off. And if you do take that one play away, which was a little bit chaotic, you know, he was looking left and looks back right, and Tom Clements will work with him on that. I think it was a solid performance that still left you maybe wanting a little bit more, but a quarterback that still to me is trending in the right direction, that shows upside, that shows promise and potential, but is still raw, is extremely, extremely raw, and is going to make mistakes like that. But do I think in a worst case scenario, meaning if Jordan Love goes down, like could you game plan some stuff for him with an actual, you know, big time wide receiver core, good running back, great offensive line? I think there's enough there, and I think he's enough of a gamer that he's at least going to make it interesting. It's probably not going to be perfect. I don't know that he's going to go 2-2 in a four-game series or four-game stretch, but I like a lot of the stuff that I still see from Michael Pratt. That if you erase that one interception, which is a big play to erase from the game, that's a brutal throw. But if you took that away, I'd feel pretty confident. Not confident. I feel pretty good coming out of this game for Michael Pratt. But that was a big time throw. In the wrong way, right? But he had the great throw too to Bo Melton. And again, I don't think it's difficult. I don't think you have to be an NFL scout to see what a lot of the really fun things that Michael Pratt can bring to the table. And I know that the play to go try to make the tackle is stupid, and I'm sure Matt LaFleur and company don't necessarily want that. There's a part of me that's like, all right, you know, this isn't Jordan Love. Like, you know, if you lose Michael Pratt, it's not, you know, to an injury or whatever. It's not like, oh my goodness, the season's over. Obviously, you don't want him to get hurt. But I kind of like the intensity. I kind of like that he's going out to lead on a blocking play. I kind of like that he's going to do everything he can to get down there. Like I think Matt LaFleur said, like a gunner on special teams to go make a tackle. I kind of like that energy. And you can just tell, like, and trust me, that the guys on the team are going to respect that as well. And they're going to see it and they're going to notice it. And they're going to rally around that in case he ever does have to get into a game, because he's going to give everything he's got. And if he does make a mistake, he's going to go and he's going to go try to, you know, murder the interceptor, to try to get that ball back and force a fumble or something. Like he was trying to lay a hit. And unfortunately he got some friendly fire and, you know, got the wind knocked out of him on the play. But I do like the passion that he plays with. But clearly a lot of work to do still for Michael Pratt. And then Sean Clifford, 6 for 14, 53 yards, one touchdown, no picks. Yeah, you know, there's the throw to Malik Heath in the end zone. I thought it was a really good throw. It looks behind him on the play, but it's kind of exactly where that throw needs to be. If he leads him, it leads it right into a defender. And Malik Heath did a great job adjusting on it. If that ball is any higher, lower, left, or right, I think it's incomplete, and it might even be worse than that if he throws it left and actually leads him on the play. So I thought that was actually a really nice ball. You know, there's the play where he kind of like, he gets the snap clean and fumbles it and has to roll out. There's some throws that he would certainly like to have back. It just always kind of leaves you wanting for a little bit more. And I think the disappointing thing for me is I thought Clifford last year, for the most part, preseason training camp, did some pretty good things. And it just has felt a little bit off just this entire offseason. Just hasn't felt as clean, crisp, efficient. A lot of turnovers and just some throws that he is not completing with, you know, confidence is how I would kind of put it. And there's a little bit of gamer in him. I didn't think there's a brutal game for Clifford. It started that way. It was a really rough start. Although I will say Joel Wilson dropped one of those passes, which hurt his completion percentage a little bit as well. But, you know, 14 attempts for 53 yards is not a great day at the office for, you know, a quarterback. If the number two quarterback is on the roster, I don't know, but there's some serious question marks as to whether or not they have a true backup on this team. I think they have two guys that they can maybe develop. I think Michael Pratt's the better developmental quarterback. Now the question is, do they actually have a backup quarterback? More on that in just a moment. And then obviously the other one is the kicker battle, which was going incredibly well on the day, at least. Joseph was 2 for 2 on field goals, 1 for 1 on extra points, hit a 55-yarder. Carlson was 1 of 1 and 2 of 2 on extra points, hit a 54-yard field goal. You're feeling like this is going well. And then it wasn't. 32-yard attempt at the end of the game, and he completely misses it right. And this is one of those things where it is no conditions, good snap, perfect day, friendly confines of Lambeau Field, no pressure whatsoever, 32-yarder, has to be a gimme, has to be a gimme, and it's not. And this is the sort of chaos and the unpredictability that you get with Anders Carlson. It would be one thing if, like, 45, or let's even say 40 and under, like 40 and under, he's got it on lock, right? And then anything 41 to 60 is like, no idea. We don't know what's going to happen. Like, okay, it's still not ideal, but you kind of at least know a little bit what you're getting. And you know, if it's 40 or under, it's going to be, you know, made almost no matter what. This is just indicative of the Anders Carlson that we've seen, not only since he's got to Green Bay, but even in college as well. We haven't necessarily seen the growth. The inconsistency has been consistent. And I don't feel like that anyone can be super confident going into the season with Anders as the kicker. I hope, you know, if they do go with Anders, that he just goes out and crushes it all season and he takes that step and all of a sudden he gets on a hot streak. That's great. But even if he does get on a hot streak, we've also seen him go on cold streaks. And that could be an issue at some point as well. And that's what's going to make this, I think, a really, I don't know if it's a difficult decision. It's just, it's a really difficult spot to be in for Green Bay, because I'm sure the fifth round pick, they spent the ammo on him. This is a position that sometimes, kind of like QB, you have to have a little bit of patience and understand that. It wouldn't shock me still if Green Bay went with Anders, but this is just the Anders Carlson experience. Where just when it kind of feels like, all right, hey, we're getting something going a little bit here, it's like, up 32-yarder missed. And those are big points in games. This one obviously did not cost them, not that it would have mattered in a preseason game anyway, but those will matter come regular season time. Those will win or lose you games. And we don't have to go far back where it's, you know, again, the playoff game is not all on Anders by any stretch of the imagination, but that's a huge field goal to miss in that game that could have potentially changed the outcome. And those points, those lost points, I mean, man, this is a league of parity. These games are close. Green Bay is going to play a lot of really close games this year. And if they continue to have some of these kicks that, you know, they lose points on, that could result in an extra loss or two through the course of the regular season. And do I think that that's going to be the difference between playoffs and no playoffs? I hope not, but it could be the difference between the North and, you know, just a wild card team. It could be the difference between advancing in a playoff game and not advancing in a playoff game. And I get that the problem here is that, you know, Anders Carlson now is 81.6% in camp, but Greg Joseph 78.9, Alex Hale 66.7. There's not a very clear and obvious, you know, answer that's on the roster right now. And if you look around the league, it's very difficult to find a easy solution either. But when Matt LaFleur was asked about this, because I got accused in the post game of just being an Anders Carlson hater, that I'm, you know, trying to spin a narrative here. This is a real legitimate thing. And one, I know because I'm in the press box and hear every other person talking about it as well. All the key articles from all the key beat writers included, do the Packers have the kicker on the roster right now? But also, Matt freaking LaFleur answered the question about the kicker in this way, about whether or not the kicker is on the roster. He said, quote, "That's not even a question for me, to be honest with you," meaning that this is a Goody question, basically. It's Goody's ultimate decision. He said, "We've got a really good sample size, and then we'll see what happens just around the league." More on that in a moment. Certainly, there were some really good moments, but those guys went in there. Both those guys went in there, hit a 54-yarder and a 55-yarder, and then there's a poor moment there where we missed a chip shot. Again, a lot of good, some we know we can be better at, and we'll wait and see. I just want to go back. We'll see what happens around the league. he has every opportunity here to be like, yep, Anders is going to be our kicker this year. And I'm not saying he necessarily would have done that when he's got two other kickers on the roster, but like he could have been like, yes, we're, you know, one of these three kickers will be our opening day kicker. And then you would have probably read into it that, all right, Anders is the guy. He literally said, we'll see what happens around the league. That is not exactly a ringing endorsement of any kickers that are on the team. And you might think that this was just some kicking shenanigan sham, that it was always set up for Anders Carlson to be the kicker. I don't see it that way. I don't think that they wanted to go out and spend major money because I think they hoped that Anders would be the guy. But it has been very clear that they have been trying to bring in competition to try to find someone that, if it's Anders, great. If it's not, they're willing to go in a different direction, whether that is Greg Joseph, whether it's, you know, Alex Hale, which is obviously probably more of a long-term option. They've gone through other kickers through this offseason as well. And it has been, quite frankly, again, not good enough. And I like, if Matt LaFleur the other day said he wants to vomit every time he's asked about number one wide receiver, I want to vomit every time I hear somebody compare the situation to Mason Crosby. The kicking is different now. The bar is raised, and the, you know, 81.6% would have been at the very bottom of the league, you know, this past year. And you need consistency at that position. And Matt LaFleur, again, in his quote, said, we'll see what happens around the league. That means they're looking at other kickers to see what might be available. And if they think there's a better option, they will go with a better option. And then he was asked about the backup quarterback job and said, quote, similar to the kicking competition in terms of there were some really good moments. And then there's some things that we absolutely have to do better. And then we'll evaluate everything that's out there for us. Now, that could be interpreted as, well, you know, evaluate everything that's out there, meaning like all the tape, all the preseason. It felt like, with him saying very similar to the kicker position, we'll see what's out there on the market if we need to bring in a different backup QB. I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that the backup QB could be on another roster right now, and you could maybe keep a Michael Pratt as a developmental QB3 on the roster. These are going to be some big time decisions to make. And maybe we will get to Wednesday next week, after all the waiver claims are made, after cuts are made Tuesday, waiver claims are made on Wednesday, all the trades are done, and maybe Sean Clifford is just the number two, and maybe Michael Pratt's the number three, and maybe Anders Carlson is the kicker, and we'll look back and say, oh, guess that was all much ado about nothing. But right now, I do really wholeheartedly believe that it is a coin flip as to whether or not it'll be, and I'll say this, I don't think Greg Joseph, and I certainly don't think Alex Hale are in this conversation. It is Anders, or it is somebody that's on another team right now. And I think it's a true coin flip between the two. And as far as backup QB, I'm more inclined to say, I think one of the quarterbacks on the team right now are more likely to be the backup QB, but there will be quarterbacks that will be available that I think they can acquire either via trade or waivers that could be in that conversation. And that will be something that Goody has to look at. So that is going to be a very interesting next 48 to 72 hours to see, I guess 72 since what, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. But I'll even go further, 96, because, you know, waiver claims on Wednesday too, to see what happens at those two positions. In case you are wondering, some of the other kickers that are out there, Matthew Wright, 1-for-1 with a 26-yarder for the Steelers in their preseason game this week. Jude McAtminy, 2-for-2 with a 43-yarder for the Giants this week. Austin Seibert, the Jets' other kicker, did not kick in the game. Spencer Schrader for the Colts was 2-for-2 on field goals, including a 56-yarder and 2-for-2 on extra points. And if you're a real junkie and want to watch preseason football on Sunday to see some of the other kickers, it is possible that Braden Narveson for the Titans, Joey Sly and Chad Ryland for the Patriots, and Charlie Smith for the Saints all could kick on Sunday, so keep an eye out for those as well. Those are probably the names that you would be looking at if Green Bay did go with another kicker. All right, other notes from the game. I thought this was the best that the run blocking has looked at any point in camp or preseason so far. Again, take it with whatever grain of salt you want, because all the starters are not out there. Even the top two backups are not, or at least top backup is not out there. Dillard is not out there if he ends up making the team. So you're missing a lot of guys that are going to be your core seven here, probably on the team. But I did like what Kadeem Telford did. Jacob Monk had moments. Lasita Smith had moments. There was just a lot better run blocking. And I thought we saw a more cohesive overall game. I won't even say game plan, but just how they went about running the football, really smashing it down the Ravens' throat and just playing with the physicality. And I thought that was really fun to see. And I really thought that that served the running backs well. And I thought the running backs ran really, really hard. All three of them, Wilson, Merriweather, and McCrary. Now, especially I'll say Merriweather and Wilson had some plays from a pass pro standpoint that you would like to see still a little bit better, which is why they didn't maybe grade out quite as well. But I thought from a running standpoint, I thought they both ran, all three of them ran very, very hard behind their pads. And it was fun to see a more physical brand of football in the running game and just dominate in the trenches. And I thought that was one of the real keys to why Green Bay was able to win this game as easily as they were. What is up, everybody? We are back with another exciting week of Prize Picks action. And if you have not started playing Prize Picks yet, what are you waiting for? You need to sign up right now and you will quickly realize why it's America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Now that Team USA has brought home the gold, WNBA basketball is ready to heat back up, and it's already been a huge weekend from Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And right now, you could turn $10 into $1,000 while watching the stars tear it up in the WNBA. And did you know that you can set your lineup in as little as 60 seconds? Just pick more or pick less on a player's stat projections and you are locked in. Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and of course, Wisconsin. This week, I'm going with Kelsey Plum and Arike Ogunbowale in what should be a massively fun week of basketball on Prize Picks. And the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course, they were gone. Goodbye, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game, I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy-to-find tickets to last-minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest-growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy, you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only, in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Just a couple really interesting defensive notes. It was interesting that when they started the game, Christian Welch was the sort of base nickel linebacker. And then in obvious passing downs, it became Christian Young, who is a safety in college who's moved to linebacker. So they made that sort of run defense for pass defense swap and more obvious pass downs. It's not necessarily noteworthy for anything that's going to happen this season, but it does tell you maybe what they feel a little bit about Christian Welch as a cover linebacker. They probably view him more as an early down backer with special teams value and don't really probably see him as a guy who maybe is going to play, even in some injury situations, as a linebacker on passing down. So just kind of a noteworthy one there as you start making your 53-man roster predictions. And then they did have Zane Anderson over Ketan Oladapo in this game, meaning Anderson was playing earlier and Oladapo came in later. Now, I don't think there's any real chance that Oladapo gets cut as a fifth-round pick, and I think Matt LaFleur spoke highly of him the other day with what he did. He's still kind of catching up from all the time that he missed, so I'm not necessarily comparing apples to apples there, but I am. You know, it was interesting nonetheless that Zane Anderson was in prior to Ketan Oladapo. Some of the big plays in this game, of course, the Aaron Mosby sack fumble, that was a huge play. He's unblocked on the play, but he gets there in a millisecond and then forces the fumble. Probably would have had a scoop and score had Anthony Johnson not beat him to it. So kudos to Anthony Johnson for winning that race. Aaron Mosby also had a pick, dropped into coverage, And then, you know, just really made a really nice hands catch on it, which sometimes for those dropping defensive ends, you don't know how that's going to go, but he made a super athletic play and a big time interception. Christian Welch's pick, which we talked about, and then the Bo Melton touchdown from Michael Pratt. Those are, I think, the four big plays in this game. The players that helped themselves the most, Aaron Mosby, you know, I don't know that Green Bay is going to keep five defensive ends. If they do, they'll have a decision between Brenton Cox and Aaron Mosby. But I think Mosby's been the better of the two in preseason so far. And I would argue probably in training camp as well. And that's a huge performance. Man, you get a pick and a forced fumble that turns into a touchdown. That's a big day at the office. And when you are, again, a player that's right on the bubble and you put that on your tape, and I thought he did a couple other nice plays as well in this game, that's going to go a long way. Now, there's, you know, this is not a complete and total package at defensive end. He can play some special teams. He does have a little bit of versatility. He has played some, you know, stand-up linebacker in the past. I don't think that's in his future right now with where he's at with just his body type right now. But he is an interesting player, and he's got a little bit of juice coming off the edge. Again, and he's just kind of outperformed Brenton Cox up until this point. Doesn't necessarily mean that they would keep him over Cox, but he really put his best foot forward and really showed why, at least for his from his standpoint, what he can be. And again, you put that on tape and put that on your resume, that's going to be noteworthy in a game like that. Christian Welch, same thing. We talked about that already, but big interception, pass deflection, multiple tackles, had a really nice play on special teams. Again, for a player that's doing everything he can to make the roster, thought that was a really impressive performance. Malik Heath, man, after week one, it really felt like this was trending towards Grant Dubose. I think Malik Heath has put this away, in my opinion. Maybe it's not quite that cut and dry, but man, Malik Heath's been awesome these past couple weeks. And the touchdown catch he had another catch where he had to reach behind him. Thought he was getting open. Even in the Denver game, he was getting open deep. It just wasn't the connections from the quarterbacks. But I thought he's had a really, really impressive 2 weeks of football. I think he's put himself ahead of Grant Dubose in a at least not insignificant way. I'll put it that way. But I thought he really, really helped himself in this game. I don't know that Bo Melton needed to help himself, and this was still not a complete game for Melton. He had a couple plays where he didn't get open, another play where he had a false start, but a huge touchdown. It just shows the upside that he has. And I think Melton, when he gets more with the ones and gets with Jordan Love, you can see, I think, a little bit of different juice and you know, just maybe a little bit more comfortability. But I didn't think this was a great preseason from Bo, but I still think there's so much talent there, so much upside. And he showed that. That was a great catch on the back shoulder to go up and get it, high point it, keep it away from the defender, come down with it, survive the ground. Just a big time play from Bo Melton. I think that was exactly what he needed. And hopefully that gets a little bit of confidence back for him. I'm not saying he was necessarily lacking it, but there were a couple of drops early in preseason. And I still think there's a ton of talent there with Bo Melton. Anthony Johnson Jr., another one where I don't know that he needed to help himself, but man, did he play physical football. He had a couple big time hits in this game, and you just love seeing him play with that tenacity. I thought he set the tone on defense. And I do think on the big touchdown play, I know Kalen King's kind of the one. I asked Matt LaFleur about that post-practice, and he said two players kind of took the underneath route, and looks like the linebacker probably was maybe a little bit more right to do so, and Anthony Johnson probably came up a little bit too aggressively, probably should have stayed back in that moment. But overall, he made up for it in a huge way. And of course had the scoop and score as well. Kalen King had the forced fumble. I thought Kadeem Telfort had a really solid game overall. I thought he helped himself. Travis Glover, I thought not a perfect game. There's a lot to clean up, but I did think there was, if you look close enough these last 2 weeks, there's some good stuff that he put on tape that I think is going to be sort of, you know, upside stuff. That's exactly what he needed to show. I still thought this was a plus overall for Glover as he tries to make the team. And then one other player I want to talk about here, Chris freaking Russell, a guy they picked up kind of out of nowhere. He's played minimal snaps these last 2 weeks. He is a tackling machine, and he looked really good both weeks doing it. I mean, really good. I mean, he looked so smooth and just getting to the ball looks so natural, really instinctive. He's not going to make a 53. I mean, unless he has like some sort of Chris Barnes moment, that'd be crazy. But man, what he did in limited playing time was impressive. And I really hope that they bring him back in the practice squad, because I was once again, he had five tackles. I think he played like 20 some snaps towards the end in this one, but like last week it was like seven snaps and he made like three or four tackles. I think it was three, but like he looked, like I said, he looks really good doing it. My guess is this is probably nothing. It just ends up being a practice squad guy, and that's probably it. And this is probably, I don't know, maybe we never hear from Chris Russell again. But man, I was really impressed with what he put on tape in very limited playing time these past 2 weeks. A few players who hurt themselves, Grant Dubois. I thought these past couple weeks he had opportunities, a lot of playing time, didn't separate well, couldn't make any big plays. I thought not a brutal game. I had a very slight negative grade on Dubois. There were a couple really good blocks that he had in this one, but just if you're comparing Heath to Dubois, Heath had the better day, and that's bad for Dubois. And again, I didn't think he did anything to sort of stand out. Sean Clifford, you know, we kind of went over it. If you're trying to win the number two job, these last 2 weeks have not been a great way to, you know, kind of do that. I thought he, you know, both these last 2 weeks for him have been missed opportunities, and I think just left everyone wanting a little bit more. Brenton Cox, Aaron Mosby, huge performance. I thought Cox had a rough week one, really good week two, and then a tough week three. Didn't have a ton of opportunity in this one, but I think there was one good play that he had on a pass rush, but still relatively quiet. And then Jonathan Ford, not a brutal game. There was some really good stuff that he did, but he still plays really high, gets washed out of plays sometimes. There is good out there. And we'll talk about his injury in just a second as well. So it wasn't, again, a brutal performance, but I thought he needed to do a little bit more and show a little bit more consistency if he really wanted to make the case for being a sixth defensive tackle on this team. Injury updates, Raylan Goforth left with an ankle injury. LJ Davis was not announced or anything, but on tape, you could see him pull up almost like on his hamstring. And it was on the play that they targeted him deep down the right sideline. It should have been a catch, but the receiver, I think, kind of bobbled it a little bit and went out of bounds, or just let him too far out of bounds, one or the other. And right after that play, he pulled up lame, and it looked like a hamstring sort of thing, and he did not return to the game. Michael Pratt just got the wind knocked out of him, and then Jonathan Ford was carted off with a calf injury, which, of course, is not going to help his case either, and that'll be an interesting injury situation as well. One of the things I asked Matt LaFleur about in his post-game presser was about the right guard position. There, I think somebody else asked a question first about right guard and who would be, you know, the potential starter. First of all, he was extremely complimentary of Sean Ryan. I do believe Sean Ryan will be the starter in week one. But one of the things, what I asked him was, you know, last year you did the John Runyon Jr., Sean Ryan rotation. Is that something that you could do with Sean Ryan and Jordan Morgan? And he said, huh, I like the way you're going there. And, you know, he kind of had a, you know, and he said, basically, I don't know, we'll see, everything's on the table. But you could tell there was, you know, maybe a little hint of, yeah, we've had some thoughts about doing that, and maybe we will do that. Maybe it won't be week one. We'll see what Jordan can kind of handle coming back from injury and how much they want to put on his plate. But it would not surprise me if we did see a Jordan Morgan, Sean Ryan rotation at some point this season. And it would not shock me if it was as early as week one against the Eagles. All right, we'll finish up with grades. We talked about the vast majority of these players, so I'm just going to go through them a little bit more quick here. My highest graded defenders in this game, Christian Welch, plus 0.9, Aaron Mosby, plus 0.75, Anthony Johnson Jr., plus 0.45, Chris Russell, plus 0.35, Kalen King, plus 0.3. We talked about all those guys already, and then Carl Brooks, plus 0.25. Really liked what Brooks did. Thought he held up well in the run game, made a couple of penetrating plays. Thought that was a nice performance. I thought him and Wooden, when you're matched up against backups and you're, I don't necessarily say that they're, at least like Wooden, like a starting caliber player, but they're good rotational players. You want to see them stand out. I thought Wooden and Brooks, you could easily tell, were like, all right, yeah, those two are probably don't belong on a group of backups on the field. You could just tell there was a degree better of what they were, and that's exactly what you wanted to see. My lowest graded defenders, LJ Davis, negative 0.35, Keontae Shad, negative 0.25, and then Ketan Oladapo, negative 0.25. The big negative for Oladapo was the illegal block penalty on the return from Christian Welch. So that was like the big negative play. Other than that, it would have been a slight negative, but mostly a neutral game. No major concerns there for Oladapo. My highest graded players on offense, Malik Heath, plus 0.55, Kadeem Telford, plus 0.3, Royce Newman, yes, Royce Newman, plus 0.3, had a solid day at the office, and Nate McCrary, plus 0.25. My lowest graded players, I really didn't have low graded players on offense. Donovan Jennings had like one bad play, negative 0.15. Caleb Jones was mostly fine. There was some good stuff. There's some stuff that needed a little bit of cleaning up. He had a negative 0.1 that's like a neutral grade, and Grant Dubois was a negative 0.05, almost an entirely neutral grade. So there's really not any negatives here for the offense, and there was barely any for the defense. It was just a good, clean game, and a lot of the guys that really needed big performances, guys like Welch, Mosby, you know, Kalen King, Malik Heath, Kadeem Telford. Thought those guys really, really helped themselves in this game. All right, that is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be back tomorrow with a 53-man roster prediction, my final prediction on who is going to make this team. I'm starting to feel a little bit more confident about my prediction. We'll see if I can get it right or if it goes drastically wrong and Green Bay goes an entirely different direction. I do think there's some hard things to predict with the injuries, which players go on that, you know, IR to start the season, that you can use those two new IR, you know, designated to return spots prior to having to cut players. You know, I think there's going to be some very hard things to predict. What do they do at kicker and quarterback? It'll be interesting, but I'll do my best to sort through it all on tomorrow's episode. So make sure to subscribe, like, comment, give those 5-star reviews, and check out those Packaday Podcast YouTube memberships as well. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Shea Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Ritaka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, Dan Gesford, and Love and Football. I will see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.